The Battle for Liberty, Episode 11.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Battle for Liberty. Once again, I'm your host, Mike Tilden. Welcome back to the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. I'm so thrilled you've decided to listen today. Really helps me out. Before we get started into the topic, I want to go ahead and remind you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you can tell a friend about the show so that we can grow our listenership, I'd be very appreciative. As always, you should check out the site at battleforliberty.com. You should follow me on Twitter at @mybattleliberty. And if you want, you can email me at mike@battleforliberty.com. I do show notes pages for all of my shows, and they're available at battleforliberty.com and then /the number of the episode. So this is episode number 11, so your show notes page will be battleforliberty.com/11. All right, well, it's been a couple of weeks since I've produced an episode, and I apologize for that, but I had another busy travel week. I went to San Diego and Jose. Believe it or not, I was in California two separate times in one week. And on those trips, I brought the microphone with me, and I had the intention of slowly recording an episode over the course of that week and then producing it at the end of the week. But the peer pressure of attending these nightly social work events with my coworkers, it got to me. I'm the new guy on my team, and I really didn't want to come off as antisocial, so I wound up attending all the dinners and cocktail hours and things like that. And so, of course, that left absolutely no time for research, recording, and production because, of course, during the day, I was working. So then once I got home, it was my daughter's third birthday, which was an absolute blast, but suffice to say, I've been all over the place and the podcast took a back seat. Well, sometimes it has to. As usual, I really appreciate your understanding with the sporadic nature of the release dates. Rest assured, it's no reflection on my affinity for this show and what I'm doing here, which is trying to bring you along on my journey as I learn about libertarianism and freedom and all things associated with those topics. All of this hectic scheduling lately has made me a little reflective about the future format of the Battle for Liberty podcast. Now, I haven't made any decisions yet, but I'm strongly considering a format change. And I don't want to elaborate any further on that at this point because I haven't thought it out fully. I haven't come to a decision. But once I do, trust me, you'll be the first to know. So if there's any change coming, I'll make sure to announce it on the website and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. But the show isn't going away. I'm thinking of a format change, and I'll let you in on that in a couple weeks. All right, so the topic for today is going to be healthcare, and in particular, how health insurance works today and how the way that it works is an affront to a free market. If anyone ever tells you, well, we have a free market in healthcare and it just doesn't work, you should slap them silly, verbally, of course. So I'm going to start with a story. I'm going to give you a little bit of background on my family's experience with healthcare and health insurance to give you an idea of how I've come to hold the opinions that I do. So over the course of approximately the last 3 to 4 years, my family has experienced nightmare after nightmare in regards to dealing with healthcare professionals and insurance companies. Now, not necessarily the healthcare professionals themselves, but during this podcast, please understand that when I refer to these healthcare professionals, I'm referring to their business, Okay, so I'm not talking about Dr. Smith. I'm talking about Dr. Smith's practice, right? I'm not talking about a nurse at a hospital. I'm talking about the hospital as a business, okay? There are lots of very good and dedicated healthcare professionals out there. I'm not talking about them for the purposes of the next 30 to 40 minutes. So just please understand that at the outset. All right, so as I said, over the last couple of years, we've had just nightmares in regards to dealing with medical facilities, doctor's offices, and insurance companies. That 3 to 4 year window that I talked about perfectly coincides with the birth of our first child. That's when we first began to notice some anomalies and some other problems that I'm going to talk about as the show progresses. Now, as is the case with many people, prior to having children, we went to the doctor really infrequently. My wife and I are relatively healthy and young, and so we didn't think a lot about healthcare at the time, certainly not health insurance. You know, insurance was something I opted to pay for because I wanted to assure that, you know, if either of us ever needed emergent or catastrophic care, that we'd have a decent measure of coverage. But that all changed when our first child came around. And like everyone else who's ever had children, we started seeing various different doctors quite a bit more frequently. At first, it was my wife, of course, seeing the OBGYN practice. But then once my daughter was born, we were seeing the pediatrician pretty often. And it's been a snowball effect ever since that time, especially now that we have two children. My wife had to have surgery. So as you know, as life progresses, you have children and things in your body start needing more attention. You know, this is the normal story that everybody deals with, right? Healthcare becomes a much bigger part of your life. So about the time that our healthcare visits increased, the company that I was working for, which is a very large company, was clearly seeking to lower its healthcare costs, just like every other company. With the advent of Obamacare, companies like the one for which I worked at the time, they're all trying desperately to figure out a way to afford the massive increase in the cost of healthcare that they're fronting. And that's a side note that I want to make sure everybody understands. A lot of people forget that, you know, if they get their health insurance from their employer, that oftentimes the employer is paying the lion's share of that cost. And at the time, my company was no different. My monthly premium was very affordable to me because I was only paying a certain portion of it. Right? If you work for a large company and they're providing you with health insurance, you see your monthly premiums at $200 or $300 a month, and you compare that to what these poor slobs on the news are paying, and of course you're comparing yourself to a small business person who's providing their own insurance. And they're saying, oh, I'm paying $1,400, $1,500 a month for my premiums, and you say, oh, I'm only paying $200 or $300. What's wrong with them? Well, the truth of the matter is your premium is no different. It's just that your company is paying the bulk of it, okay? That is built into your pay. It's not necessarily considered salary, but it's part of the overall package of compensation that you or I receive for our time and efforts. So it's really important we understand that. So, you know, when Obamacare went into effect, these companies had to start covering lots more people and for lots more conditions, pre-existing conditions, all this sort of thing. Well, all that's going to do is increase the cost. And so these companies have, very rightly so, started figuring out ways to reduce these costs. And so in an effort to do that, at the time, my employer slowly began shifting the masses of as many employees as they could away from a pretty expensive PPO plan to a lower cost either HRA or HSA. And I think it's pretty important that if you're not familiar with those types of plans or how they work, we need to go over it briefly here so that we're all on the same page. Now, if you don't understand that, don't worry, you're not alone. I can't tell you how many times I talk to my coworkers, and I'm not insulting them. They're incredibly bright, intelligent people. But we talk about our healthcare plans, and they just don't understand the difference between a PPO and an HRA and an HSA. They don't get it, and it's not their fault. We're going to talk about why it's not their fault here in a little bit. But let's start with just a very, very brief overview of what the different plans are so that maybe you can understand why businesses have reacted the way that they have. It's not as if the businesses are these evil organizations that purely seek to put you as the worker down and raise themselves up so that they can drive in gold-plated cars on streets of money. So let's talk first about a PPO. So a PPO is a type of insurance plan that stands for Preferred Provider Organization. And in that type of plan, generally, you can visit any doctor you want that's considered in-network without first having to see your primary care physician to receive a referral. And what a referral is really, it's just an authorization from a primary care doc that says, yes, you really do know need to go see a dermatologist or an ENT doc or a cardiologist. It's a way that in earlier types of health insurance plans, it's a way that the health insurance companies kept their costs down. If they simply let every member of their health insurance plan go see any specialist they wanted to for any reason whatsoever, their costs would skyrocket. And so in the past, the way that they limited this is they said, okay, if you want to go see a dermatologist, you need to go to your primary care doctor first and get a referral. And all the referral is the primary care doc saying, yes, I am a healthcare provider. I agree. They need to go see a dermatologist. Here's the referral. And once you have it, then the insurance company would pay for it. Well, a PPO comes along and says, you know what? That was inconvenient. We're going to go ahead and give you this plan where you just go see whatever doctor you want. And as long as they're in network, some sort of coverage will apply. Okay. Now, with a PPO, the monthly premiums tend to be fairly high, but the per visit copay for most doctors is fairly low. Okay, so basically, if you know you're going to be seeing doctors quite a bit, it's a good idea to pay this higher monthly premium so that you only have a $20 or $40 copay whenever you visit the majority of your providers. These types of plans, these PPOs, they tend to be very expensive for major companies to operate because, again, remember, they're paying the bulk of the monthly premium. So if the overall monthly premium is higher, as we've already identified with PPO, and if the company is paying 60 to 80% of that, well, then their costs, they're paying the bulk of it. So that's a particular type of health insurance plan that a lot of companies are trying to get away from. Okay, next let's talk about an HRA, or a health reimbursement account. Now, this is truly an odd insurance plan and an odd institution that I'm telling you this could only ever have been invented in a highly regulated government bureaucracy because it just makes no sense the way that it works. So in this type of plan, just like a PPO, you can typically still see any doctor you want without a referral. And as usual, in-network docs are less expensive and out-of-network are more expensive. The good news with an HRA is that your monthly premium tends to be a lot less than a PPO. However, in exchange for paying those lower premiums, your deductible is usually higher and your copays are higher and sometimes non-existent. And so when you hear non-existent, you're probably asking, well, what does it mean when a copay is non-existent? Well, what that means is that you pay 100% out of pocket for your services until you meet your yearly deductible. And depending on who you see, that could be pretty expensive. Many of the HRAs that are out there offer copays for routine care and primary care physicians, but 100% out of pocket for specialists and ERs and things like that. It all depends. Every plan is a little bit different. There's lots and lots of them out there, and every state is different. I'm just generally giving you an overview of how an HRA works. Okay, so you kind of have this split of some copays and some you pay out of pocket till you hit your deductible. So in order to ease your burden of that out-of-pocket portion that you might have to pay prior to meeting your deductible, a lot of employers typically put a specific amount of money into your HRA for you. They will gift you a certain amount of money for you to pay those out-of-pocket expenses, and that account that they're putting the money into is called an HRA, or health reimbursement account. Now, this account is a controlled, restricted, but tax-free account for which you are only allowed to make certain withdrawals for a specific list of healthcare reasons. And of course, the government decides what is a healthcare expense and what is not. For example, you can use HRA money to pay for smoking cessation programs, for medical conferences, and even sterilization. But you can't use that money to pay for a natural saline nasal spray for your sick or boogery kid. I mean, go figure, right? I'm going to put on the show notes page two IRS publications that tell you exactly what is a medical expense and what isn't. One of them's IRS publication 502 and one's number 969. If you're on a PPO and you're in the future you're thinking you might have to go to an HRA or the next account we're going to talk about called an HSA, you may want to look at those. It's really important to know what your limitations are when you're away from something like a PPO. Basically, with an HRA, if you're pretty healthy and you're not going to go to the doctor very often, an HRA might actually be a really good account for you because your monthly expenses will be a lot lower. And if and when you do need to go to the doctor, oftentimes your HRA account balance will cover the cost prior to you needing to reach into your pocket to pay the difference for the services. But there's an insidious part here, and this is one of the reasons I hate HRA plans. The money that goes into that HRA account, it has to be used every year or most of it will expire. How's that for completely misunderstanding the role of money? Money can't expire. It's either yours or it's not. So clearly in this type of account, government is stating, and you're giving into it, that the money isn't yours. The money really belongs to the government, and they simply decide how much of it you can keep and for how long. So you better use it or it's going to be gone. Now, in the past couple of years, the government has come along and benevolently stated that, well, you know what? You can keep some of that money from year to year, but it has to be more than a certain amount and less than a certain amount in order to roll over. Wow, how generous of our overlords, don't you think? What a bunch of great people these people are. Obviously, from my sarcasm, you can sense that this makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. An HRA account may be right for you. I didn't like that aspect of it. So now we're going to talk about the last type of account I referenced, which is called an HSA or a health savings account. And this is somewhat similar to an HRA, but it's got a couple major differences. Again, with this plan, you can usually see any doctor you want without a referral necessary. The monthly premiums for this plan tend to be even cheaper than an HRA. However, your deductible can be either higher or lower than an HRA. It just all depends on your employer and the specific plan that they've chosen. So, you know, your deductible can be higher or lower. I don't really know. You'd have to look for yourself. And once again, just like an HRA, in an HSA, you're going to have this tax-free healthcare account from which you can use money for healthcare expenses. And again, these expenses have to be approved by good old Uncle Sam. Like I said earlier, don't ever let anyone tell you that healthcare has been struggling under the free market. We've never had a free market in healthcare for the last, probably 100 years. Anyways, that's a side note. With an HSA, again, sometimes employers will make yearly contributions to this account. I know my employer does, which is fantastic. But the way that this plan differs from an HRA is that you yourself can make contributions to this account, and you should. The account can be taken with you from employer to employer, and the funds never expire. They roll over every year. So over time, you can build up large healthcare accounts to pay for future needs. But in many HSA plans, as is the case with the HSA plan that my family currently has, there's no such thing as a copay. That's a biggie. So what does that mean? Well, quite simply, it means that if you're on this plan, you're going to pay 100% out of pocket for everything until you meet your deductible. There's no such thing as a copay. So, once you've met that deductible, then and only then does the plan begin to pay a large percentage of the medical costs. So you're truly relying on that HSA account to cover those expenses. And in the short run, HSAs can be pretty painful. I mean, when you're brand new and you're trying to build up this account, you don't have a lot of money in there. You may be paying out of pocket for a little while. But in the long run, if you save up enough money, you begin to worry less and less about healthcare expenses. It also has kind of a tertiary benefit of forcing more and more people to shop around for healthcare and to truly pay attention to the charges that are coming through and keep healthcare practitioners honest with their billing practices. We're going to talk about why that's important later. This wasn't necessarily the intent, but it's been one of the unintended consequences of moving to things like HSAs is when you're paying 100% out of pocket, you begin to pay much greater attention to things like how much does this procedure cost at Dr. Smith and how much does this procedure cost at Dr. Thompson? And I'll compare the two and maybe cost comes into my decision making. I've always thought it's just absolutely bonkers that people try to sit in their ivory tower and say, well, when it comes to healthcare, cost is not a factor. Well, that's just simply not true. Cost is a factor in every single decision that we make as human beings. Everything comes with a cost. And sometimes cost might not be the number one concern, but it's going to be a concern. And it doesn't make you uncaring or evil if when you roll into the emergency room with your daughter who's got hives all over her body, you ask, how much is this going to cost? That doesn't mean that if they say it's a big amount of money, you're just going to take her home and say, well, hope you get over it. That's not how anybody practices. Of course, the health of your child or someone that you love is going to be the number one concern. But a slightly less important, albeit still very high concern, is once everyone's all better, how am I going to pay for this? Okay? So anyways, those are the various different types of health insurance plans that are, I think, fairly common. Please don't get me wrong. I am not a benefits expert. There are probably many, many other types of plans out there, but these are the three that I'm familiar with and that I know most of the people I know, my family, my friends, these are the types of plans that are pretty popular right now. Okay. And so that leads me into a discussion I want to have with you about what I talked about at the beginning of the episode, which is why my family and I have been led to just this feeling of total disgust when we deal with medical practitioners and insurance companies today. Now that we know what those types of insurance plans are that are out there, what I want to do is I want to ask you, how much of that conversation on health insurance have you memorized? And I'm going to guess that unless you've been sick and if you haven't had to manage the healthcare for an entire family, you're probably not going to remember all of those pieces of medical mumbo jumbo with their obscene rules and conditions. As I alluded to earlier, most people simply just don't think about this from day to day. The mentality that we're raised on is if you work for a good company who provides you with health insurance, you don't have to worry about anything. You go to the doctor when you're sick, you pay whatever small bill arrives, and that's that, and the insurance companies deal with the rest of it. And that's not a good way to think about your healthcare. It's important that you realize right now that healthcare and health insurance is changing. More and more as a consumer, you're going to have to be aware of precisely what's going on with what procedures the doctor is going to bill for, how your health insurance covers it, and how much you're going to have to pay. Because over time, these PPO plans are going to be less and less common, and things like health savings accounts are going to be more and more common. And why do you think it is that I say you're going to have to pay more attention? Well, let me tell you a story, because I feel that my family and I will not say we're pioneers, but certainly when compared to many of my contemporaries, Most of our friends and family are still on some sort of PPO where they don't have to pay a lot of attention. Well, those expensive plans are going to be a thing of the past in the future. Mark my words, they're going to be. We'll all be on some sort of HSA or HRA or something similar. They may invent a new type of plan, but the bottom line is you're going to be responsible for far more of the business transaction between you and your medical providers. So over these last 3 years that I've been telling you about, I have to tell you that there literally have been zero instances of a medical office or facility properly billing for the healthcare visit for the services that we actually received. And no, I'm not misusing the word literally. It's one of my big pet peeves is when people mean to say figuratively and instead they say literally. No, in this case, I'm not being stupid with that word. There are zero instances of a medical office getting it right. In every single instance of receiving care from a doctor or a hospital, we as a family have learned to carefully ask the billing office for the exact CPT codes that they will be billing for and how much they charge for that service. We kindly inform them at the time of the visit that we will be paying out of pocket for their services and that we really do need to know exactly how much money we're going to pay. After all, we're not rich. We have a strict budget for healthcare and we have to stick to it. I don't think that's unreasonable. By the way, if you ever want to see a surprised look on someone's face, show up to any medical facility and tell the billing office that you're going to be paying out of pocket for that day. They'll look at you like you have five heads. It's as if they're going to say, "Whoa, what? You actually want to treat healthcare as you would any other service? What planet are you from?" These poor office administrators have been beaten over the head so many times with the health insurance stick that they just can't think about their services in the way that they'd expect to receive any other type of service in this world. It just doesn't compute. And worse yet, if you try to tell them how your insurance is supposed to work, because trust me, I know how my insurance works. Most office administrators do not understand these differences that we've talked about for the past 25 minutes or so. They will look at you when you say, "This is how my insurance works." They'll go, okay, don't worry about it. Just give me your insurance card. I'll type my little numbers into my little computer, and whatever it spits back at me, that's what I'm going to tell you. Yeah, you know what? No thanks. You want to know why I don't trust you and your computer, Miss Office Administrator? Well, it's because every single time we go to the doctor and we take the time and we take the trouble to come to whatever agreement we're going to come to for what the services will cost, after we've had this good idea in our heads of how much money needs to be spent from our dwindling HSA account, we find something that was at first startling, but now has just become, unfortunately, quite expected. What we find is that after the services were rendered, usually 6 to 8 weeks later, sometimes much, much more than that, after we've taken the time to comb through the bill that we've received from the medical provider, cross-referenced it with the EOB, which is an explanation of benefits from the insurance company, and then taken the time to look up the CPT code that they billed, guess what we find? Well, it's usually one of three things. First, we find incorrect CPT codes. There have been a few times where we've looked over the bill and we see a CPT code and we look it up and we find that that procedure never took place. I mean, what a crock. So we call them on it. We call the billing office and they assure us, "Oh, this was just a simple clerical error." And you know, that'd be believable if it was isolated, but it's not. Because the second thing that can happen is a duplicate CPT code. There have been several times again where we've caught the provider doubling up on the codes. We'll get one code billed from one day and the exact same code billed for either that same day, a second instance of it, or a few days later. And again, when we call them on it, they say, "Oh, it's just a clerical error." Okay, sure. Yeah, we're starting to see a pattern here. And please understand, this is not one provider. It's not like there's just this one bad provider that you can avoid and you'll be just fine. No, this is multiple different providers, specialists, primary care doctors from three separate states that we've found all of these errors and problems. So the third thing that I want to mention is when a bill or a claim is reprocessed. And this one, I think, can be blamed on both the medical offices and the insurance company. Why? Well, because I've investigated and found in separate instances that both entities have been the source of the reprocessing, as they call it. A good example of a medical facility doing this, there was one time when I thought the entire process should be over by now. We thought we were okay. We paid every bill that came. We were expecting that the matter was closed. But then months later, and I'm talking 11 months later, this was for a bill for when my son was born, and he's 11 months old, and I get a bill from the hospital stay that was related to his birth, and the facility sends us this bill for $200, and I call them to inquire and say, what is the deal? He's almost a year old. What are you doing sending me a $200 bill? And they say, oh, yeah, you know what? We looked at this one again, and we decided that we had actually provided you with more services that you paid for. We just forgot to code for it in the original bill. So we've gone ahead and submitted that code to the insurance company, and you owe us more money. God, what a slap in the face. In a separate instance, though, I caught an insurance company doing the exact same thing. Once again, the claim was, quote, reprocessed, and they determined, you know what? You owe more money. I mean, it just, I don't think at this point that it's just bad luck, okay? After this many incidents of duplicate CPT codes, incorrect CPT codes, reprocessing months later, you have to wonder if this is a systemic problem. And so that leads me to a pretty haunting question. Now, I know full well that I'm not the typical consumer. I know I'm a little bit curmudgeon-y, and from a retailing perspective, I'm probably difficult to deal with at times. I also think it's a safe bet to assume that most people don't question their bills or investigate EOBs and CPT codes as fervently as I do. Now, in just an anecdotal survey, I've asked most of my family and friends if they do any of this. Do they look into their healthcare costs at all? And most of them don't. So that leads me to my haunting question. How often are people being improperly billed that it goes completely unnoticed? Furthermore, is it actually a mistake? I'm not so sure anymore. Now, I don't have any evidence, and I'm certainly not accusing any doctor or facility or insurance company of anything nefarious, but I've always wondered that, you know, is it not the case that when it's the end of the month or the fiscal quarter and it rolls around and, boy, their revenue isn't looking too good, is that when these businesses decide maybe it's time to review the claims and services? And do they look for people with really good insurance on file and say, wow, they paid the first bill. Let's just reprocess with a new code, or let's see what we can do here. Maybe squeeze a couple extra bucks out of them. I certainly don't know that that's the case. I cannot prove that. My experience is purely anecdotal. But I got to tell you, it sure feels that way. That's how it feels to me anyways. So with all of this in mind, and now that you have just a small idea of why I don't trust our current system or setup of healthcare and insurance in this country, I want to ask a few follow-up questions that hopefully tie this into libertarianism. So first, why is this such a frustrating and confusing process for most people? Well, the answer is pretty simple. First, the market is not allowed to function normally. Usually, in any service-based market, consumers have a pretty good idea of how much something costs, whether or not they can afford it, who's getting their money, and the alternatives available if they don't like the service that they have received. But with healthcare, that's not the case. Because of the crazy government-mandated restrictions and regulations, most people don't understand healthcare as a business the way they would understand any other business. They see it as an entitlement, or some people see it as a human right. They don't appreciate the ins and outs of the actual business with whom they're contracting. Now, interestingly enough, this goes all the way back to the price controls that were instituted by FDR in 1943 during World War II. At that time, President Roosevelt used an executive order to freeze the prices of, quote, anything that would affect the cost of living, end quote. Well, okay, of course, that means everything, including wages. Now, Putting something like a price control on wages, or really anything for that matter, is a massive market distortion that's going to have incredibly vast and longstanding consequences. One of those consequences was the creation of company-paid health insurance plans. Because if a company can't entice better workers with higher wages, then how are they going to do it? Well, I want to say it's the War Labor Board or something like that. I apologize. I don't have the exact citation, but a government bureaucracy, that's all you need to know, during World War II decided that fringe benefits like company-paid health insurance did not fall under the restriction of the price control on wages. So, boom, corporate health insurance was born, all thanks to a statist market distortion. Fast forward to today, and we're stuck in this wasteland of additional regulations and laws that have all piggybacked off of the notion that most people will pay for their healthcare and medical services through some sort of savings plan that we mistakenly call health insurance. And of course, it's nothing like health insurance should be. So, follow-up question number two, what's the right way to deal with healthcare? I would argue that we should deal with healthcare in the same way that we would deal with any other large and potentially important expenditure in your life. It's pretty simple. Save up for it. Think about vehicle insurance or home insurance. What are you insuring against? Do you insure your vehicle for oil changes, for new tires, for a serpentine belt, a paint job? Of course not. These are all pieces of an overall routine maintenance plan that's required to keep your car running for a long time. What you insure against with your car or your home are those catastrophic events that you couldn't possibly see coming and probably couldn't afford right away out of pocket. These are things like auto accidents, vehicle theft, vandalism, house fires, floods, that kind of thing. That's what you insure against. So why don't we think that way with health insurance? Why do we insure for routine medical exams, short-run prescription drugs, birth control, elective surgery, et cetera, et cetera? It just makes no sense. And choosing to insure against these routine expenses that if the market was allowed to function the way that it should, you would be able to afford quite easily. Insuring against those things pushes the cost of everything else way up and keeps it up artificially. This is all thanks to an original market distortion. Additionally, the regulations imposed by the state make it very difficult for insurance companies to compete properly across state lines, again, keeping prices high. I'd love to be able to shop around for medical care in much the same way that I shop for something like, say, cheap airfare. And with my HSA account, to a certain extent, I'm slowly moving in that direction because, as I alluded to earlier, the brunt of the cost is my responsibility until we hit a pretty high deductible. So it's not likely we're ever going to hit that deductible this year. So what that means is medical care is out of pocket for me and my family for the entire year, probably every year. Well, what does that do? Well, what I've noticed is we don't go to the ER very much anymore, right? We don't have true emergencies very often, and if someone does get sick after hours, we go to an urgent care, which is still more than an office visit, but it's far cheaper than an ER, right? We don't take our children to the doctor for things that in the past, the argument was, well, it's only a $20 copay, you may as well take him in, right? I can't tell you how often I hear that when I'm around my office, right? And again, please, don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to make fun of or badmouth any of my coworkers. I just don't think they've thought fully through why it's bad to have that attitude. But I hear it all the time. People say, well, I have a $20 copay. I'll just take them in, right? I'll just take them in. And what that means is you're taking your kids in to see the doctor for things that you probably don't need to take them in for. And that raises the price because these services are being used for things that you don't really need, right? It's an artificial increase in demand. But that's a digression. What I want to do now is just urge you, the next time that you have an encounter with a medical provider, think about the entire process. Have Henry Hazlitt, in your mind, don't just think about yourself and the short term. Think about the entire healthcare system and the long term. Think about how convoluted and backwards the entire process is, and then ask yourself, do I have any control over how this works? If I receive what I think is bad service, can I really find something better somewhere else? Or is it all just the same? Is this just another time in my life where, because the government is heavily regulating and distorting the free market, I have to settle for poor customer service, high costs, and little to no alternatives? Well, I think what you'll find is that the question answers itself. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how a libertarian might address healthcare, I would urge you to check out the Tom Woods Show. He's got a bunch of great episodes dedicated to healthcare and how the free market could handle this situation far better. I'll reference all of those episodes on the show notes page. So what do you think? Does this topic ring true for you? Have you had a similar experience, or do you think I'm just wildly off base and that everything I'm talking to you about tonight is nothing more than my own bad luck and my own experiences that have nothing to do with anyone else? If that's what you think, tweet me at @MyBattleLiberty. Let me know. Send me an email. I really do enjoy, I've had a couple listeners so far send me emails, and in fact, I'm hoping that my next episode, I'm going to highlight one of those emails and just go through the conversation that we had so that you can learn from it, just like I learned from it. Those are really great ways. You got to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Please refer that friend. If you've been listening to these 11 episodes and you've said, hey, I think Mike's onto something here, I think it's really worth our time to sit down together for 30 to 40 minutes and learn about liberty. If that's what you think, refer a friend. Find someone that you think is fed up with the ridiculous Republican versus Democrat paradigm and send them my way. Refer them to this show. Ask them to take a couple episodes in and just see what happens. That's going to do it for tonight's episode. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, battle on.